Atheist Nomads, episode 155, Ghostbusting with Haley Stevens.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
We are the Atheist Nomads, bringing you history, science, politics, religion, and interviews with leaders in the atheist community. Not all those who wander are lost. Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin. Joining me as always is Wesley.
Hello, everybody.
Joining us today is my lovely wife, Lauren.
Hello.
And our guest today is paranormal investigator and ghost hunter Haley Stevens.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, my goodness.
And as you can tell, she is from the UK. When I was in England on the International Air Cadet Exchange, I had an Air Training Corps cadet tell me that every house in England is haunted. Haley, is this true?
Pretty much true, yeah. What they're haunted by, though, I couldn't say.
It's everything is so old.
It is old, yeah. It really is. Like, In the town that I live in, we have a bridge that dates from the 1100s, and you don't really consider that until someone points it out to you. Like, oh yeah, this bridge that we're using every day is like the only bridge that gets the town from one side to the other, dates back from the 1100s. It's really old, and it's probably going to break apart soon. But yeah, everything's old. And we were just talking about Pokemon Go, and I play Pokemon Go, and as I was going to work this morning, I found a Pokestop, which was a local pub, and on Pokemon Go it said Rose and Crown, the UK's most haunted pub, and that was the first I'd ever heard of it being haunted. So yeah, I think everything is haunted in England.
Everything ties together. Oh my gosh.
Let me put this into a tad.
Was it a ghost Pokemon? That'd be awesome.
No, I didn't get a ghost Pokemon. No.
A tad of perspective for you. Washington State wasn't even formed until 1889. I mean, yeah.
1892 for us in Idaho. Whoop, whoop.
1890. Yeah.
We're pretty cool like that. We're babies.
Yeah.
So,
which is why we explain why we're so fucked up right now.
So, Haley, what's your story? How did you get into the whole ghost hunting and paranormal investigation thing?
Well, I've always been interested in ghosts. I think everybody says that, you know, since I was a child. I think that's just something that everybody says, but it's true. We lived, the house that I grew up in a village, small village called Hilperton, we were convinced that the house was haunted, and it scared me. I was terrified the whole time that we lived there, but it was really interesting at the same time. And then we moved out of there when I was 18. And around that time, I decided to make my own ghost hunting team. And I was inspired by television shows like Most Haunted and their ilk. And yeah, so then for 2 years, I went out ghost hunting. And when I say ghost hunting, it literally was looking for ghosts. And in those 2 years, I started to kind of experience things that to me didn't quite make sense, and I kind of explored it more and more, and I found the rational information. And about 2 years after starting out as a ghost hunter, I stopped believing in ghosts, and
I was gonna say, spoiler alert, there's no ghosts.
I became a much more rational investigator, and I've been doing it ever since, really. Just because it's really interesting, but also people do have these weird experiences that sometimes seemingly have no explanation, and that really interests me. That's, you know, I want to go out and solve that mystery if I can.
So you're like the skeptical superhero of ghost hunting.
I don't think people would agree that I'm a superhero. In fact, there are a lot of people out there who would tell you the exact opposite.
You're a villain. But, you know,
I am the villain. I'm the one who goes in. It's like the Scooby Gang, you know, going in, tearing off masks. and unearthing hoaxes and stuff like that. I've never torn a mask off of anybody, but, you know, there's still time.
There's plenty of time.
That's what I always loved about Scooby-Doo. I mean, in the cartoon, there was, you know, some old guy, you know, they could always pull a mask off. But in the movies, there actually was a ghost that kind of irked me.
Yeah, they were real ghosts. Well, one of them was Scrappy-Doo. Pulling a hoax.
And nobody likes Scrappy-Doo, so we forget about that one.
Especially not after that.
For an interesting coincidence, I guess, is I actually watched the Scooby-Doo movie in a theater in Britain.
Oh, really?
That would have been an Uxbridge outside of London. No, that building wasn't. No.
I bet you it was.
I met the guy who played Shaggy at Comic-Con. He was nice.
Yep.
He really loves children. He's like, they're amazing.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, ghost hunting, though, you know, there are parallels that people kind of draw between paranormal research and Scooby-Doo and the X-Files and things like that. But in real life, it's you know, it's nothing like that, really. It can get quite tedious sometimes because you imagine going out, running around and hunting down these hoaxes and uncovering the truths and it being like these television shows that you see. But really, a lot of the time can be spent just sat behind your computer, just reading notes and researching more than anything.
Mm. Also, it's just like every other scientific endeavor.
Pretty much, yeah.
I'm going to be Indiana Jones and go discover some lost civilization. Or I'll read like 15 people's theses.
Yeah. Were you?
It's always kind of irked me that, you know, you have all these people going out and basically believing things that are a little odd to begin with, but they're all seem to make a lot of the same mistakes using the same equipment over and over, and nobody learns from their mistakes or from others' mistakes. Haven't you done a little looking into some of the equipment that's been used?
Well, I used to use the equipment when I first started doing the ghost hunting. You know, I had all the gear that other ghost hunters had and that they promote on the television shows. And, you know, I spent a lot of money on it. And
yeah, I was going to say, the expensive equipment.
It really is expensive. And once you've spent all that money on that kind of gear, and once you've spent all those hours doing your research, when you start to doubt that, you know, what you're doing is the right way of doing it, or that ghosts really do exist, or that there's an afterlife and so on, you know, that the money that you've invested and the time that you've invested can be something that can actually stop you from walking away from it, because it's just such a huge part of who you are and what you do. I've still got some of the kit around here, and when I look back and think, why did I use that equipment? It was because other people did. And I guess I presume that because other people were doing it, it must be right. You know, how could 200, 300 people be doing something wrong without anybody calling them out for it? But it turns out people were calling them out for it. I just didn't see that side of it. And then you start to see the other logical fallacies. But the equipment, you know, it's basic stuff like EMF meters. There's this theory that ghosts will, as they're manifesting, and when I talk about ghosts, I could throw alleged and so-called into the conversation all day. So if I don't, it's not because I'm saying ghosts are real. It's just I get better for saying that all the time, alleged. But when ghosts manifest, the idea is that they give off an energy that disrupts the naturally occurring electromagnetic fields around us. And you can detect these fluctuations using an EMF meter. And it turns out that that doesn't happen. there's also another side of it, where another theory where people believe that certain levels of EM fields can cause people to have not hallucinations as such, but they can feel strange stuff, and that kind of goes into Persinger's God Helmet experiments and so on. But the bog standard EMF meters that ghost hunters are using are not going to detect fields like that, even if those fields were going to have that effect on them. So it's a lot more complicated. So you do have these people running around using these pieces of kit that don't actually do what they think they're doing. So they think they're being scientific, but they're not. And you find that what happens is you have these bog standard pieces of equipment that are used by ghost hunters, and they're redesigned all the time by companies because it's profitable. So you'll find the EMF meter, there'll be probably 20 or so different types out there. And then you'll have a ghost box, which is something that people use to talk to ghosts in real time. And there'll be various versions of those too. They've even reinvented the Ouija board. So rather than just being a board, there is now one that's a two-tier board. So you've got two levels of the Ouija board, and the top tier is on a spring, and it kind of goes backwards and forwards. And so, yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of money to be made from people who believe in ghosts. And that's why you see this kind of, this, I don't know, constant stream of new equipment.
So it's like religion is very profitable and hard to leave.
I think that, yeah, there are some similarities with religious beliefs. And obviously, some people who investigate ghosts and believe in ghosts, that is their religious belief. You've got the spiritualist movement, of course, in the UK.
That's really big in the UK, isn't it? Or getting
yeah.
There.
Yeah, well, we've got the NUS, which is the National Union of Spiritualists. I believe that's the title. And that's a, you know, a proper religion that you can follow. You can go to their churches and their events and so on.
It's kind of Christian, but it involves spiritualism too, doesn't it?
It does, very much so. And you'll normally find that they have psychics and mediums doing readings at their congregations and so on.
That's pretty old school stuff.
So you
there.
Got a two-dimensional Ouija board that's starting to encroach on the 3D chess that Star Trek has. You know, one of my favorite pieces of kit was always the radio scanner, where it scans through different radio frequencies looking for words. And
well, there are two different. Well, there are several different types, but the two that I'm familiar with is the ghost box, which I mentioned before. That is supposed to give you real-time communication, and it does that by skipping through different radio stations. And normally what would then happen is the radio would stick to one channel, but there's a way, you know, there's a function that just keeps it skipping through. And the theory, or I say theory, the hypothesis behind that is that the ghosts will use that chattering noise and that sound to communicate. So you'll catch snippets of words, and that's the ghost. But, you know, in real life, what's actually causing that is that radio stations happen to broadcast words and sounds.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't make sense.
And sometimes when they are mixed together in a random sequence, as they are if you're skipping through them every second or so, you start to hear meaning where there is none. It's pareidolia, basically, auditory illusions. The other thing, which is kind of similar, I actually feel quite old when I talk about this equipment because I haven't used a lot of this because it's all new. So once I gave up ghost hunting, I stopped buying the equipment because I had other stuff to buy, you know, to spend the money on. And so all this new kit comes out and I have to try and keep up. And I feel a bit like an older person trying to keep up with the kids and their technology. But the other kind of audio thing that ghost hunters use, well, there's good old-fashioned EMF, EVP, sorry, which is electronic voice phenomena. And that's where you record on a dictaphone or maybe your iPhone or whatever, and you say, is there anybody there? And you leave a gap, and then you say, what's your name? And you leave a gap, and so on and so forth. And then you play it back, and you're meant to be able to hear the voices of the dead answering your questions. Obviously, the ghost box takes out the delay. It's direct communication. And then you've got a device called the Ovilus. And you can also get an iOvilus, which is for your phone. And this...
dang it, Apple!
You really can. Yeah, and basically... I can't quite. Basically, it detects it measures the EM fields where you are, and it's claimed that scientists have associated different words with different EM ranges and spikes and fluctuations and so on. So as the electromagnetic field changes around you. This is apparently the ghost trying to communicate a certain word. And so onto the screen will appear all these different words. And what tends to happen is there'll be, say, 10 words, and then one of them or two of them might match or somehow fit the ghost story that's associated with the location. And then the ghost hunters will go, oh, look, it says boy and drowned or boy in water. And we know this little boy drowned that haunts this pub. So this must be proof.
Does this happen a lot at pubs?
It does, actually. when I went out on these, you know, good old-fashioned ghost hunts, we mostly went to pubs. And we would end up there going to the pub and waiting for it to shut. And then once it had shut, we would then do the ghost hunt. And more and more now, you find that a lot of locations that have kind of historic hauntings associated with them, that back in when I was a ghost hunter, you wouldn't have had to pay to go there. Now you do.
And they've
worked out that they can make a profit. And actually, I don't necessarily see that as being a bad thing.
Ghosts are for paying customers only.
Well, I think, yeah, it opens everybody up to the possibility of being scammed. And we know that people do hoax stuff so that they can charge people to come in. But also it does mean, I mean, in England, we've got, like you said, we've got some really old places, and they are usually owned by charitable trusts who have to raise a certain amount of money to kind of upkeep the building. And one way of raising that money is by allowing ghost hunters to go in and do these events. And, you know, I think it's a good idea. But again, there's still some scope there for some kind of harm to happen if people are being misled. So I think the venue does need to make sure it's happening in an ethical manner. But a lot of them do. And, you know, I've worked with a couple of historic houses who have wanted to draw up some kind of code of ethics that investigators have to abide by. So, you know, there is progress being made. But having to pay to go into these locations means that people are looking for other alternatives. And so you find they end up in pubs and offices and, you know, the graveyards and so on, where they don't have to pay.
I was kind of thinking a 3-drink minimum to get into a pub would be probably a bonus for them.
Everybody wins then.
More likely to find something.
Well, I suppose it could be argued that pubs are full of spirits, but not the ones that are.
Pete fell. He didn't fall down. He got shoved. So let's measure some EMP and see what's going on.
Interestingly, I think it was 2007. I might be wrong, but smoking was banned in public places in England, and you notice, or at least this is just anecdotally, but I certainly noticed, and I know that others did, a decrease in the number of photos of strange mists that people were taking. Nice. And I think there was a direct correlation there, but I don't know.
Well, maybe vaping will bring that back.
Maybe it will, yeah.
Let people vape in bars so they can have their ghosts back.
Well, the UK is actually at least the Public Health England and one of the physicians associations are definitely encouraging allowing vaping in public and being very cautious with introducing new regulation. Basically the opposite of what the FDA is doing.
So I'm sure we will see an increase in ghost photos.
Yes.
Great. At least it means I've got something to do now. So,
yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Atheist Nomads is proudly brought to you by Archway Hosting. Check out their low-price, full-featured hosting solutions at archwayhosting.com. That's ARCHWAY hosting.com.
Hey, we're also brought to you by listeners just like you. Find out how you can become a patron at patreon.com/atheistnomads. That's patreon.com/atheistnomads.
And we're back. So what would you say is, have you found anything that was difficult to explain?
Yeah, I've had very strange experiences. I think anybody who investigates weird things is going to experience them. I mean, that's just the nature of these experiences that people report to us, because, you know, at the root of these experiences and these strange happenings is a rational cause. We just don't know what it is. So when an investigator like myself goes into a place or starts to investigate a case, the chances are that we're going to experience it too, and we just have to try and work out what it is. The weirdest thing, it wasn't scary. That you tend to find things are scary and then things are weird, and they're two different categories. And whenever I've experienced something really weird, I've never been terrified by it. I've never run off screaming like you see on these television shows and on YouTube channels and so on. There have been instances where I've run off screaming, but it tends to be somebody's come around a corner and startled you and, you know, scared you silly.
You'll never get a TV show without some drama.
Yeah, well, there is always drama, but that can be explained. But the stuff, the really weird stuff, it kind of happens and then leaves you wondering what the hell just happened, rather than freaking out. And the weirdest thing, I was in this old, I can't remember when it dates back to, but it's an old manor house. It's a huge, huge place that's been turned into a hotel. And the family that owned the manor house, they had a chapel built within the actual house. So they lived in the house and they would go to church within the house, and so would the staff and so on. And the chapel is still there. It's kind of as it was, which is like a nice feature for the hotel. And we're in this chapel and we're setting up a camcorder on a tripod, because it's reported that a figure is seen coming from the back of the chapel and down the aisle. And we're wondering, perhaps it's just a person cutting through. So we're going to catch it on camera, hopefully, and then work out if it's a person or not. And as I'm setting the camcorder up, somebody grabbed my arm from behind. And you know when someone's pulling your arm to try and get your attention? Yeah. It was like that. And I turned thinking that it was my colleague, and there was nobody there. And I can't quite explain that one. I think it could have, you know, looking back, it could have been a muscle spasm, or I was wearing a shirt. So it could have been the shirt relaxing or tugging on my elbow. But yeah, that one was quite puzzling for a while. And there was another case in a shopping centre in a town near where I live. It's said to be extremely haunted. It used to be, it was a castle, and then it was mills from the 1400s. And then, you know, from the 1980s, there's been this shopping centre there. And it's said to be haunted by all sorts of things.
Typical
80s. And we're in there and we're investigating. And actually, we're not even investigating at this point. We're just stood there trying to work out who's going to go where, because it's such a huge area to cover. And we're stood in, you know, like in shopping malls, you have all the shops, then you have the bits in between. We're stood in one of those areas between all the shops. And there is like a stand that sells, I think they were selling handbags or something. And that was all covered up for the night. And we stood on one side of that. And on the other side of that, we suddenly realized we could hear somebody singing. So we ran round both sides and we met on the other side, and there was nobody there. So we assumed they were inside the stand, and we kind of went under. There was nobody there. And we're inside kind of the stand looking for them, and we hear somebody laughing. And I'm pretty sure that was a prank. I feel confident that we had all angles covered, though. But, you know, there's still a chance that that was just somebody kind of messing around with us. But that one was quite weird and creepy. At the time, we felt like we couldn't explain it, and that there was no way anybody could have gotten away. If I was given the chance to go back in, obviously, then we could explore how maybe somebody could have done that and then run away. But until then,
just
that's
a
one of
Bluetooth
those
speaker.
Maybe, but we didn't see anything like that. But yeah. I didn't think about that, actually.
I have a little battery powered Bluetooth speaker that I could put anywhere. And as long as I'm within, you know, 40, 50 feet of it, I can broadcast to it.
That's interesting. I didn't think of that. But yeah, there you go. It's one of those things we will never know.
So you've been to some pretty interesting places.
Yeah, some I have. All sorts of places. The thing with ghosts is that people tend to think that they don't haunt places, they haunt sites. So, you know, you could build a house, a brand new house, and it could be haunted because of what was on the land before. So you tend to find that ghost stories are associated with all sorts of buildings, regardless of what the history of them is. Quite interesting, really. Yeah. And obviously I say that not believing in ghosts. I tend to think of ghosts as a cultural phenomenon rather than a paranormal or supernatural phenomena. So when I start talking about things like that, people get really confused. So like, hang on, you don't believe in ghosts, so what are you talking about? But when you look at the cultural aspect of ghost stories and hauntings, it gets really quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know that Ben Radford did a lot of study into like the Chupacabra and saying that that came out about the time that a movie did back in the early 90s. Do you see any tie-in between say Ghostbusters, the movie, and stuff like this becoming more popular?
I don't know. I don't know if I buy that ghosts become more popular because of television shows and movies and so on. I can see that maybe ghost hunting would become a bit more popular with television shows, but it's quite difficult to know for sure because pre-Most Haunted, you know, which was early 2000s, there was not really any way of communicating with paranormal teams across the globe. I mean, yeah, there was the internet, but nobody was really making these large communities. So it's difficult to know how many paranormal teams there were pre-Most Haunted compared to now. And with things like the X-Files, I saw people freaking out a lot about how the X-Files was going to make people believe in all sorts of weird things and the paranormal was going to become much more popular. But actually, the paranormal has always been popular.
And exactly, all over the world.
Yeah, and most polls, when the public are kind of quizzed about this, about 50% of people say they believe in ghosts or have had a paranormal experience. And it doesn't really change all that much. I mean, it does change, but I think that's more about the questions that are asked rather than, you know, the belief, levels of belief. But I think roughly about 50% of people tend to say that they believe in ghosts. And that, I don't think that really, I don't know. I think there definitely need to be studies into it, what can make people believe when they didn't believe before. I know there have been studies about what people can perceive to be more true when they're watching shows about things like UFOs and so on. But when it comes to things like Ghostbusters and the X-Files and things like that, I don't know if there's any link. I really don't.
Well, I know that there is.
I think they helped. I think they helped like people get into government conspiracies, but other than that, not really monsters.
I don't know. I think you would have had to have believed in government conspiracies a bit before. I don't know. I don't know if. Well, yeah, especially now, but in modern times, there's all sorts of stuff going on, but. I don't feel as though television shows could be a trigger. I think that there would have to be something already in place for people to believe, you know. And you look at The X-Files and it's not just paranormal ideas. So it's not just about out-of-body experiences. It's out-of-body experiences and going and killing somebody whilst you're having an out-of-body experience. Or it's not just abduction. It's, you know, it's kind of super paranormal ideas that are being promoted. And, you know, there probably are people out there who believe in that, but I don't think they believe in it because of the X-Files. I don't know.
No, but I do know that there are some people who believe because of the paranormal investigative TV shows. I have met a few people who are like, well, they're showing it on TV. Yeah. What more proof do you want? And I'm like, we're on a different wavelength here.
Yeah, there have been some studies that have shown that if these television shows have disclaimers, people are less likely to believe what's being portrayed on the television screen is true. So if the can't remember the exact studies. I have blogged about them because I was really curious about this, and I researched into it, and I read a load of different papers. And they showed the same shows to people, some without disclaimers, and then some with different disclaimers. So some that were very strong disclaimers, and some that were just, you know, the regular kind of disclaimers. And they found that people who watched the show without a disclaimer were more likely to agree that the events had happened. So there is, I think, when it comes to documentaries about the paranormal or shows that present themselves as factual, like Ghost Hunters and Most Haunted, and I think
Building the Pyramids.
Yeah, Ancient Aliens. And I think the latest ghost hunting show in America is Ghost Brothers, really? Which is three black men going out ghost hunting. I think one of the taglines was something like, why is ghost hunting so white? Which again is another completely fascinating subject. But yeah, these shows often present themselves as factual when they're not. They're nothing close to factual. And I think that can sway people. I feel as though there is a distinction between the shows that present factual information that may not be factual and fictional shows. I'm not sure how people react to, you know, those different genres.
Wow. All right. Well, we're going to take another break, but before that, we do have some feedback coming in off of the live stream. Chimera Productions is complaining that it keeps cutting out. Sorry, I shut down a bunch of network processes that I forgot to turn off before we started this. I think that's helped, but YouTube is still reporting that the stream status is... Oh, now saying it's good, but mostly it's been saying bad. Sorry, still trying to figure out what's going on. Maybe I could blame the weather. It's a rainy day here, and we don't have that very often in Boise.
Ghosts.
Parker Ferguson says hi, wants a shout out because he or she loves our channel. So, hi, awesome. Parker. And Psychic Con Man, after I explained about on the chat about the bandwidth issues and how this is still experimental, Psychic Con Man said, "Experiments are good, though. Don't try experimenting on reanimated corpse. It's a bit too slimy."
Ew, body farms.
Depends on what movie.
Depends on how far along it is. You really want to try reanimation before rigor mortis sets in. Otherwise, they're going to be all, it's going to be all sorts of messed up.
All right, we're going to go ahead and play the break now, and we'll be back in just a moment. We love hearing from our listeners. You can email us at contact@atheistnomads.com, tweet us @atheistnomads, send us a message on our Facebook page at facebook.com/atheistnomads, or better yet, call us and leave us a message at 541-203-0666. We might even play it on the show. You can also help us out by leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast directory of choice. And we're back.
All right.
So, Haley, do you have a religious background at all?
I wasn't raised religious. My parents decided that my brother and I should be able to make those decisions for ourselves when we're adults. But in England, the school situation is quite weird in that you can usually only get your children into Church of England schools. So even though we weren't religious at home, we were taught religion, the Christian religion at school. And of course, you know, as young children, we go to school when we're four here. And at that age, you just kind of take it all in. So we were being taught about evolution. And at the same time, we were being taught about Noah's Ark and things like that. So
it's
all very, very weird. Yeah, really weird. And
explains why people are leaving religion in such massive amounts.
When I left primary school and went to secondary school, that's when I became atheist and realized just, you know, how stupid the curriculum had been at primary school and how messed up it was that we were taught about Noah's Ark and evolution. And I'm pretty sure that I didn't quite get evolution until I went to secondary school because of that. Because when you're taught those things, you just assume that they're both true. As a 7-year-old, I didn't think, hang on, how can that be if that is, you know, you just don't spot those holes in the logic. And then one day at secondary school, which is, we go to secondary school when we're 11 or 12. I don't know what the American version is, but we have religious education classes. And we had a teacher called Mr. Mosley, who was brilliant. And he basically got all of us to draw God. He gave us all pieces of paper and we all had to draw God. And I drew this kind of Zeus-like, you know, white hair in a robe, kind of, you know, the kind of typical way that it was taught at school. And I remember the girl sat next to me drew an alien, and then some other people drew question marks, and some people refused to draw because you're not allowed to draw Ella and so on. And I remember that lesson in particular blew my mind. It completely blew my mind, because up until that point, I had never really been exposed to all these different ideas. And it was a few years into secondary school that I started reading about atheism and so on. And yeah, long story short, here I am today.
All right.
So two things then. Our schools are actually broke up usually into three parts.
Right.
We have kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and then middle school is usually 6, 7, 8 or 6, 7, 8, 9. Then
or last 7, 8, 9 or just 7 and 8.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of weird. But then usually like 9, 10, 11, 12 for our high school. But I just want to say that your doubts, all these doubts that you have, your unbelief, I mean, you're going to be proven wrong when all the glaciers melt, all the ice caps melt, and we have global warming and all the water rises, and we're going to like save the world because of Ken Ham's Ark in Kentucky.
Oh yeah, the Ark that has like metal framing and stuff that Noah definitely didn't have back in the day.
Well, yeah, totally.
Back in the day, it was real.
Oh, if you listen to some of the creationist versions of everything, allegedly, archaeologists have found spark plug-like devices from before the flood. And so obviously they had high technology. It was a very modern society. They just happened to forget all of that when the population collapsed.
I bet it's
aliens. I think they're called the Egyptians making batteries.
Aliens.
Aliens did it. They came down, they had the spark plugs, and they're like, go for it, Noah. There's somebody out there that believes that, I'm sure.
I still seem to recall the Egyptians making batteries with clay pots and wicks and such.
Batteries, yes. Yeah. Not scaffolding.
Yeah.
Well, actually, yeah, they actually did have lots of scaffolding.
But
they were very good at that.
It was wood.
Aliens.
Aliens, yeah.
Aliens built the pyramids.
Yeah, I don't believe that, but yes, it's probably true.
Yeah, because that's one of those where there's a very simple, easy logical explanation. The way Egyptian society worked at the time was the agricultural season was 2 or 3 months long. Everybody worked agriculture for 2 or 3 months, and they had 9 to 10 months with nothing to do except for 16 to 18 hours a day of slave labor for the pharaoh.
You get enough people, you can do pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, they had one of the largest populations for any civilization at the time because of how incredibly fertile the Nile Valley was. So they were able to grow lots of crops, have a sizable population, and put everybody to work building things. And if you put 95%, 98% of the population onto building stuff, you can build some amazing stuff.
Mm. Yeah. Rather than what we've got.
I think when people kind of say that it was aliens, like with Stonehenge, for example, I think they're really kind of, I don't know, I just feel so sorry for the people who actually built those things, you know, all the effort that went into them, and aliens did it. Like, don't underplay their role in history, goddammit.
Exactly. So what do you do mostly nowadays? You mentioned you don't use the kit or anything.
No. Well, I still have the kit, but only for demonstration purposes, and actually half of it's broken now because I just don't care about it. When I have a case, it really depends on the case. What you'll find is ghost hunters, they'll have a kit in a bag and they'll go in and they'll use the same kit for every case, but not every case is the same. And so every case needs to have its own approach, its own investigation. And so what I tend to do is I'll get the person or the people who are having a strange experience to keep a diary. And every time they have a strange experience, they think may have been a ghost, I get them to write it down in the diary. And I ask that everybody does their own so that there's no kind of influencing going on between eyewitnesses. Though obviously I can't rule that out completely. And then using that, you can build up a picture of what's going on and you can try and work out what information you're missing, you know, which could be the key to what's causing whatever's happening. And I don't always have to go on site because sometimes things just jump out at me and it's kind of glaringly obvious what's happening. If I do have to go on site, I try and replicate the times at which things have happened. And I try and think about, it's almost like having a puzzle and you've got pieces missing, but you don't know what pieces are missing. So you have to try and build the picture up of what was happening, because the person who's had an experience has got, you know, that much information. They don't have, you know, an idea of what's going on around them, maybe in the next room above them, who's been doing what that day. And so I try and build up that picture. And normally you find that the answer lies in that. Obviously there's also, actually, there's a lot of dealing with hoaxes. People try and pass fakes off as ghosts all the time, usually because you can get money from the press now for selling a ghost photo. So, you know, there's a lot of trying to spot if something's kind of a hoaxed photo or video or something like that. And I host a podcast called The Spooktator, and we actually, at the end of each month, we examine the news stories from that previous month to see, you know, what was a hoax, how it was done, what caused this ghost photo in the newspaper, and so on and so forth. And it could be quite interesting.
Oh, cool.
But when it comes to the cases themselves, it is just trying to find that kind of missing information. And you do normally find that is the answer, really. And also, sometimes you don't even have to go into it that deep. Sometimes you can just look at a video or a photo and you just know from experience what has caused it, because you've dealt with it before or another investigator has dealt with it. There's a really well-documented case by Ben Radford, who we mentioned before. I think it was the Santa Fe courthouse, where something was caught coming down the stairs on a CCTV camera, and it turned out, I think it was an insect or some pollen or something like that going past the camera. And everybody, well, most paranormal investigators have seen that case. And when you're then dealing with a piece of footage that's quite similar, you can instantly go, I know exactly what this is. You know, is there a spider on your CCTV camera? And they'll go, oh yeah, there is.
So, that is awesome.
Yeah, that spider at 6 inches from the camera lens looks a lot different than something 20 feet away from it.
It does. There's a really good video from a pub in Wales, here in the UK, of this thing that just manifests, and it's going over the tables in the pub, and then it's cleaning a table. It looks like it's got an arm going out and cleaning a table. It just turns out to be a fly that's landed on the lens of the CCTV camera. And because it's so close to the lens, the camera can't focus on it, so it's just blurry. And because it's like a night vision CCTV camera, it's just pure white because it's so up close to the IR light thing. And so it just looks like this weird white blob.
That's awesome.
But yeah, yeah.
A very clean fly.
Wow. So let's turn this from ghost for just a little bit to one of our favorite people, Sally Morgan.
Okay.
What's your, can you tell us your opinion of her a little bit?
No, because I don't want to be sued.
That's pretty much sentiment I get from everybody.
Yeah, British libel laws.
I've had a few kind of close brushes with UK psychics, and I try and avoid doing that now. So when I'm blogging, I'm very careful with how I word things. And obviously here in the UK, we had Simon Singh versus the British Chiropractic Association, which was a huge libel case. And at the time, there's an organization called Sense About Science. They released a guide for kind of science writers and bloggers on what to do if you get a libel threat. And I took a lot of that advice to heart because I'm not rich enough to be sued, and I don't want to be sued. But when it comes to Sally Morgan, I have a lot of opinions. I certainly believe that her husband is a homophobe. That has been caught on camera. They have, you know, they've abused people not protesting her shows, actually. There was a chap called Mark Tilbrook who was outside one of her performances handing out leaflets telling people how to spot psychic trickery. And he caught on camera her husband and I believe it was her son-in-law abusing him, verbally abusing him and threatening him. I don't believe in psychics. It really was harsh. They got fired. I don't believe that psychics have psychic abilities. I believe that some people are very perceptive and they can trick themselves into thinking that they're able to read information about people that actually most people would be able to with a bit of concentration. I've had plenty of psychic readings. I've had my aura photographed and read. I've taken part in seances and so on. And I don't think that every psychic is out to con you out of your money. But I've never been convinced. And I think that there are, gosh, it's difficult to comment on individual psychics without getting into trouble.
Right. We don't want you getting into trouble. So
no, and I don't want to get into trouble.
Comment on the American ones.
Well, I just think when it comes to celebrity psychics, you can look at the things they're doing and 9 times out of 10, you can find a rational method of achieving their outcome. And with Sally Morgan, I think it's very interesting that the more people have criticized her work, the less she seems to do in her shows. There was some, she does this thing where she has like a big dish and you write on a card what you, who you want to contact, basically. You put it in the dish and then it goes onto stage and she randomly selects someone's name out of it or something like that. I don't know the full details. And somebody put a fake card in with a fake name and so on and so forth. And she picked up on this fictional ghost, which happened to be, I think it was a character from a television show or something like that. And that made the news and that made the headlines. And it was reported by people in the audience of her shows following that, that she no longer did that. And I think when people are criticized, if they react like that, you have to ask why they're doing that, why they're reacting in such a way. And when psychics refuse to be tested, I think you have to ask why. Whether you're a believer or a non-believer, there are genuine questions about why they're refusing to have their abilities and their claims tested in controlled conditions. And there are psychics out there who do come forward and have their abilities tested. The Merseyside Skeptic Society, for example, they ran a challenge and they did experiments with psychics with Professor Chris French. And those psychics came forward and they failed the test, basically, but at least they had the balls to do that.
Yeah.
And when somebody doesn't, I think that, you know, if you're someone who believes in psychics, you have every right to go to a psychic show, but maybe you should be asking questions about why your psychic isn't engaging with the people who are criticizing them. And not necessarily people who are throwing abuse at, you know, because Sally does get a lot of abuse thrown her way, but from people like Simon Singh, reasonable people who are just asking what I think are reasonable questions.
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, you had the MSS challenge. James Randi has an easy million for people to win.
I think the $1 million challenge is still in existence. I think they've stopped it, haven't they?
Within the last year or so? Okay, well, maybe they have.
I don't know. I'm really not sure.
I thought they always did it at TAM or some other large venue.
Well, they'll do it whenever they have somebody who's willing to do it and gets through the selection process.
I was under the impression it had finished, but I don't know for sure. I know that the last one was in 2015, I think. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that, though.
It has been terminated. I just looked it up right on the James Randi website.
I knew there were changes within the organization, and I was I thought the challenge was one of those changes, but yeah.
Well, that makes me sad.
That's because...
But, you know, there are plenty of other ways in which people can go about being tested. There are parapsychology departments at all sorts of universities across the globe. And, you know, there are organizations like the Merseyside Skeptics Society and, you know, the Independent Investigations Group. I think they're still going. You know, so there isn't a lack of ways in which psychics can put their money where their mouth is. So you have to ask why they don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I?
Yeah. And the $1 million challenge was terminated when James Randi retired.
That's right. Yep.
Okay.
Which makes sense when you actually go into retirement, wanting to have your $1 million back.
He's no spring chicken.
Yeah.
No, no.
All right.
87.
Something like that. Let's go ahead and take our last break, and then we'll go ahead and conclude.
If you like the show, consider giving us some financial support. To make it really easy with one-time donations, or to support us on a per-episode, monthly, or even annual basis using PayPal or Patreon, find out more at atheistnomads.com. Use the links on the right side of the page. $1 an episode is all we ask. Please, think of the kittens.
Do you have any big plans coming up?
No, I don't really. At the moment, I've just started a new job. And, and I'm planning to start studying in October towards a degree in social psychology.
All right.
So that will probably take up a lot of time. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing coming up, I suppose, that's kind of related to the whole skeptic thing is QEDCon, which is happening in Manchester in October also. I think it's the fifth one. I can't remember how many there have been. I think it's five. But it's a whole weekend of science and skepticism and all sorts. In fact, they start on the Friday with a skeptic camp, which is completely free to everybody. Nice. I've been every year. I've been on a couple of panels over the years. I'm going there in October, which would be great.
Nice. It reminds me of that quote from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy where he argues God out of existence and ends it with QED.
Yeah.
I was like, yay! That sounds awesome.
I think the QED stands for question,
explore, discover.
That's it, yeah. And that's organized by people from Manchester Skeptics and the Merseyside Skeptics.
Cool.
Yeah, Gavin and a bunch of people and Mike.
Michael Marshall and loads and loads of them. They do a brilliant job. And the money is, if any money that's left over goes towards two charities. So it's, it's really good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's probably one of the cheapest and best conferences around. If you could ever make it, do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really recommend it. Usually the Manchester Skeptics have their Skeptics in the Pub on the Thursday night. Then you have Skeptic Camp on the Friday. And then you have the conference on Saturday and Sunday. So, you know, and you meet skeptics from all around the world, all across Europe and further afield. And it's absolutely fantastic.
And with the pound crashing, it should just get cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah. For you, maybe.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up again.
Great. But if, you know, every year I do this fundraiser where people donate money. And I spend it on tickets for people who can't afford one. And I've just met my target. So there's enough for 10 and a half tickets, depending on whether they're students or not. So if anybody out there is listening or watching and thinks they'd like to go to QED, but they can't because they can't afford the ticket, if you go to my website, you can apply for one. And the recipients are randomly selected, and so you can send people across the conference.
That's very cool.
Seriously awesome.
Yeah.
The reason it started, and you know, it's I like to think, you know, it's like a good turn for, you know, a good community, because so much comes out of this community. But the reason I started it, I have to be quite truthful, is that Joe Nickel was speaking in 2012, and one of my friends is a huge Joe Nickel fan, and he couldn't afford to go. So we tried to raise enough money for his ticket, and in about 4 hours of doing so, we'd raised enough money for like 6 tickets, and the money kept coming in.
Oh,
and
wow.
So 2012 was the first time we did it, and we sent about 15 people over to QED instead, and we just carried on doing it every year since.
Wow.
That's awesome.
That's pretty fucking badass.
Hey, other conventions. Yeah, listen up. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Don't charge like $1,500 TAM.
I've never been to a TAM. I would absolutely love to go to a TAM. The other one I've always wanted to go to was, oh my gosh, the one by the Center for Inquiry. Mm-hmm. They have it every year, I think. I would love to go to those. Well, so,
I know there's the NCSS.
Yes.
Which is up in New York-ish, which would be awesome.
And not, yeah. You know, it's just New York.
Skeptic's Guide. And is it?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, it is both a state and a city.
It's in the city.
Okay.
Well, then you have to say New York
Skeptic's
City.
Guide, and a bunch of people go to that one, which would be awesome.
Yeah.
Or any conference in Australia.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. America and Australia are quite far away. So there are loads of different conferences that happen in Europe that I've been to. So StepCon, and oh my gosh, Denkfest, and which is Fortfest, basically.
Did you say Denkfest?
D-E-N-K Fest. Yeah. Okay. That was it. The last time I went to that one, it was in Zurich, which is really, really cool. But there just seems to be so much going on. But yeah, QED is definitely a highlight on the skeptic calendar, I think.
Nice.
Man, Dankfest sounds like it'd be a weed conference of some sort.
Yeah.
A bunch of stoners.
Do you know what that stands for?
No.
No? Okay.
No.
And
I always just think of the smell. anyways, yeah. What things have you got to brag about? What shows? What do you got? What are you doing? Where are you?
Well, you can always find me out on my blog, which is hayleyisaghost.co.uk. I've been blogging there since 2010. And I'm currently doing a podcast called The Spooktator. It's basically myself as a paranormal investigator, and we've got Ash Price, who's a magician and performer. Paul Gannon is basically, he's a comedian, or at least he says he is, and he's like, I had to say it, and he's like the world's number one Ghostbusters fan, so he does a show about Ghostbusters, and at the moment he's in his element. We've also got Alistair Coleman, who's a journalist, and Charlie Revel-Smith, who's an author. So we all kind of bring this unique, we've all got these unique perspectives about the paranormal. We bring them to the table and then discuss paranormal stories that have been in the news recently. That's The Spooktator, and you can find it at spooktator.co.uk. Oh my God, I can't believe, I don't know my own podcast website. Yeah, spooktator.co.uk. And we release episodes every month. We were doing them twice a month, but we've gone back to just once a month, just so we can make sure that they're, you know, good quality shows. Awesome. But at the moment, I do have a YouTube channel, but I'm not doing anything on there at the moment. But once I've kind of got the work, the new job and studying in check, then, you know, I'll probably be producing some more vids, but we'll see.
Very cool.
Awesome.
Yes.
But the blog is the main thing at the moment. I'm trying to write at least 2 posts a week. And on there, I've also got articles, which we kind of discussed previously, the equipment that's used by ghost hunters and stuff. I've got articles and like a guide to ghost science. So that's all covered on there. and I try and counter all sorts of news stories on there and claims that people make. But also, I guess I've always had this interest in the psychology of why people believe what they believe. So you kind of find on the blog all sorts of articles about the paranormal from quite a weird approach that you may not have considered. One of the things that I talk about a lot on the blog is the ethics of ghost research. Because when you do ghost research, whether you're a skeptic or a believer or, you know, whatever you class yourself as, there is a real chance for you to do harm to the people that you're coming into contact with. And I know from experience that when you go out as a ghost hunter or an investigator, you don't think about it. You just don't consider the ethics of what you're doing. And it isn't until something goes wrong that you then start to consider it. So on my blog, you can find my own code of ethics. And, you know, I kind of hope that other researchers will write their own one that kind of looks a bit like that, and they can use that as inspiration. But yeah, I kind of blog a lot about paranormal research from a perspective that most people who aren't paranormal researchers would never consider. The things that you probably aren't aware of that go on in the community.
And I like that your Sweet. Description on your site ends in grr.
Yeah, well, you know, monster hunter.
A monster hunter, Pokemon hunter, grr.
Yeah, I should probably add the Pokemon hunter bit on there, actually.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. But the monster hunting, that was never something I was interested in until I became a skeptic, and then I became fascinated with the monsters, mainly lake monsters. In 2012, I spent a week with Joe Nickel investigating British lake monsters. And I recently joined the Fairy Investigation Society here in England, which...
That's cool.
Yeah, I didn't know it existed, and then it relaunched. And it's been around since Victorian times, and Walt Disney used to be a member. And so they reopened applications for membership, and this time they were letting skeptics join. And I thought it would be a shame for there to be no skeptics. So, yeah, I'm also a fairy hunter. But that's more, I don't know, I haven't really done any fairy stuff. It's more just an observational thing. Yeah, it's a bit weird.
That's awesome.
But then, you know, being a paranormal investigator, I think everything I do is weird. So.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Well, we should probably let you get ready for bed, since it is late in the evening where you're at.
Okay. It's, yeah, not too late, but a lot later than where you are.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a real awesome. Pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate
thank you for
it.
Having me on. It's been good to chat. Definitely been good to chat. So thank Lovely. You.
Thanks for sharing your perspective.
Yeah. All right. And for our listeners, we'll be back next week with news. And for YouTube, I will be playing the outro now.
The podcast you're about
to... We love hearing
if I can get to the right... Like this.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing.
There we go.
Oh my God.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice, and while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.